morning. My name is Michael McCusker. I start today's program with a little fairy tale I concocted around Thanksgiving last year, which was an ancient time, long ago, before a monstrous plague had transfixed humanity with premonitions of extinction, real and foreshadowed. My little fable was about a Swedish nightingale and an infamous ogre, which I called Beauty and the Beast. I described Beauty as a Swedish teenager whose courage and intensely focused crusade is to save planet Earth and the human species as well as all other earthly biology, and who inspires this century to confront the impending holocaust of climate change. The Beast is a corrupt, specious creature of absolute zero scruples, whose manifest characteristics are dishonesty, cruelty, and betrayal, whose natural instincts are belligerent bigotry and the constant compulsion to hurt people. He is the avatar of awfulness. Who else would this wretched beast be but Donald Trump? Misanthropist, negatory narcissist, braggart and bully, and the worst president of the United States. And Beauty is obviously Greta Thunberg, who is passionately determined to save the world for future generations of regeneration. She is a millennial 21st century secular Joan of Arc, I wrote, who is enlisting multitudes of children and young people everywhere in the world to save Mother Gaia, which is not a fairy tale. She is zealously dedicated to being a clarion for restructuring human habitability as envisioned by Oregon's great writer and Delphic oracle, Ursula Le Guin, who until her death in 2018 was Oregon's greatest living writer. Le Guin visualized in her literature a post-apocalyptic world being lived in by reconstructuring on the basis of which we third millennial post-realists too simplistically deride as nativist culture. Greta is unwilling to wait for the post-apocalypse. She is a new millennium child, born in 2003. She was born with Asperger's syndrome, a form of autism defined as deeply absorbed and detached from reality, which is 180 degrees opposite her reality. She emerged from anguished mental melancholia to begin her unblinkered commitment to forestall the sixth great extinction, horrified that she and every child now alive on Earth and every subsequent generation of children are born onto a possibly dying planet. She began her crusade by picketing the Swedish parliament in her home city of Stockholm, sitting alone on the steps of the Capitol with a hand-lettered sign, "School Strike for Climate." And it would seem that only within moments, millions of children organized similar protests around the world under the rubric Fridays for Future, 3F rather than 4H. Greta Thunberg might be considered a climate Cassandra in her blunt, no-nonsense, in-everybody's-face straight talk. "I don't want you to listen to me," she said to the United Nations in New York City last year. "I want you to listen to the scientists, and then I want you to take real action. The eyes of all future generations are on you, and if you choose to fail us, I say, we will never forgive you." At this point, now enters the Beast. He is the grotesque opposite of Greta Thunberg. He reverses every attempt at planet preservation, truculently determined to smother every attempt to thwart and deceive scientific research into planet preservation, as well as plague palliative and protection. Greta Thunberg was asked in a recent interview about a video of her at the UN glaring at the appearance of Donald Trump, Was that a split-second facial expression that got blown out of proportion? The interviewer asked. I don't think you need an explanation, she said. I think people could see for themselves. Trump's flaccidly acid response to that instant-only encounter was that she seemed like a nice little girl and hoped she might have a nice life, or some similar hogwash. That flick of an eye moment was the only physically mutual sharing of an earthly space betwixt the beast and beauty, yin and yang, evil and good. Asked if the stakes of the American presidential election would be make or break ecological choice, Greta responded that a Trump victory might be the spark that makes people angry enough to start protesting and really demanding things for the climate crisis, because Trump would threaten many things, but also that Joe Biden falls short of policies close to being good enough. Asked if there is a political leader who she thinks does get it, her reply was no. The dreadful omnipresence of Donald Trump on the USA and the world in general has been an egregious example of political and cultural regression. George Washington warned when he left the presidency in 1796, cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men will be enabled to subvert the power of the people and to assert for themselves the reins of government, destroying afterwards the very engines which have lifted them to unjust dominion, quote, unquote. Donald Trump, by refusing to accept his re-election defeat and peaceably relinquish power to the victor, is precisely whom Washington, with X-ray premonition, warned about. The courts have turned away Trump's flimsy challenges of voting fraud, but he still insists he won, his essential proof being his loss of the election as evidence. The Constitution has had many enemies, foreign and domestic, but none so shamelessly menacing to the basis of democracy as Trump's spurious dissemblance of truth, honesty, and integrity. The underlying rottenness of autocracy, plutocracy, and patriarchy, which were essentially purged with the Revolution and Constitution, and no less by the Civil War, have never quite evaporated from the national psyche, but never so entirely or as flagrantly reinvigorated as during Trump's single presidential term. Yet although a dreadful example of political and cultural regression, the right-wing coup of the American presidency under Trump has tottered from its own blatant chaos and grotesque excess of political, religious, and racial intolerance. And its nihilistic attempt to fabricate the U.S. government into an ultra-conservative mafia caricature with Trump as de facto dictator has been tragic farce. But there is nothing the least bit humorous about the whiplash whirlwind of regenerated prejudices from which there seems no disembarkation soon, despite Trump's unavowed loser, quote-unquote, status, and soon eviction from the White House. Writing for the Guardian newspaper, Ross Barkin hearkened Trump as the avatar of America's worst pathologies, and that grotesque capitalism begets the grossness of Trump. And that was Mark. The ancient and atrocious issue of white supremacy and dominance, the persecution of other races and of religions, not particularly or frenetically enough Christian, have again been inflated as major themes in American politics since the advent of Trump. It is the far right that now talks of revolution, that has set up paramilitary training camps with presidential approval, patterning its concepts and plans for white revolt on a fictional account of an Aryan revolution that was written by a disaffected University of Oregon physics teacher half a century ago. And with the surprising suddenness of the rise of Trump 4 years ago, the complex and fragile fabric of democracy, tolerance, and human rights in Yankee Doodle USA have been literally hacked away and threatened with collapse, resulting from unchecked corruption, deceit, and malice. Even the fundamental of birthright citizenship has been threatened. Trump's succession of rallies since his inauguration, ostensibly to invigorate the faithful for his re-election, which he filed for immediately upon taking office, have been identical blueprints of early Nazi tactics that undermined the post-World War I Weimar Republic in Germany. They have also been super spreaders of the COVID pandemic, which Trump has refused to confront, although he is largely responsible for its deadly breadth and expansion, and particularly for his refusal to act presidential and take charge of the struggle to eradicate it, surrendering instead and radically downplaying its lethal infectiousness. He has accepted no responsibility for the virus, nor for his lack of summoning the USA's resources to impede its spread or mortality, blaming instead state governors and local officials, in particular Democrats, whom he accuses of using the pandemic as a weapon against him, never mind the hundreds of thousands of dead or sick Americans. And after losing re-election, all he seems to be doing is sulking and playing golf when he is not remonstrating with judges, Democrats, and disloyal officials, patrons, and toadies. Trump is perpetually aggrieved and a pathetic self-pitier who becomes enraged at every perceived slight or whiff of treachery. From the moment of Trump's unfortunate and regrettable election, the primary vocal and consistent concern has been his proximity to the nuclear trigger, which he has sordidly boasted is bigger than anyone else's. Given his seismically unstable temperament and cruel sense of messianic megalomania, it is not improbable that he might just use his infamous Twitter finger to punch his big nuclear button at the advent of being forced out of the White House. Speculative conjecture aside, the fact that Donald Trump remains president until January 20th, 2021, whether or not he concedes, and that he can unleash America's tremendous nuclear arsenal, checks or balances aside, might just be his last and not least act of his deplorable presidency. In the meanwhile, young Greta Thunberg works to save the planet and future for the life upon it. She says, if people don't understand that we are in a crisis, they won't put pressure on people in power. If there's no pressure on people in power, then they can continue to get away with doing basically nothing. But if you fully understand the science of climate change, then you know what you as an individual have to do. You know then that you have a responsibility. Donald Trump attempted to revive a dead, mythical, ugly, sham world of total white supremacy. Greta Thunberg hopes to prevent the sixth extinction and that the world's children of all races, creeds, and nationalities have a reasonable future on this home planet of humanity. Beauty trumps the beast. And that was something I wrote. And now I read something by Charles Hibblestad that I've read on this program before, 3 years ago, and which I also printed in my newspaper, The Born Again Bird, a few years earlier. It seems especially pertinent at this exact moment when the forever Trumpers are attempting to deny the results of an honestly won election, by a significant majority of votes. Invalidating voting veracity is a mortal wound to democracy. Freedom, According to the Right, by Charles Hillestad. Republican candidates, teabaggers, and Fox News commentators always seem to be demanding freedom, quote unquote, usually loudly and in capital letters. Could someone explain why the freedom they want always seems to involve taking it away from somebody else? They seem to want freedom to lock up anybody they feel like, lock them up forever, and on mere suspicion, without letting them have legal counsel, confrontation of their accusers, or being brought before a judge or jury. As for the lawyers who dare to defend constitutional rights of the accused, the freedom demanders demand the freedom to personally attack those lawyers for doing their job and obeying the oath they took when they were sworn to the bar. Some of the more rabid freedom demanders even seem to want the freedom to physically torture others. Not torture proven and convicted criminals, mind you, but the freedom to torture suspects, detainees, those of a competing religion, perhaps even mere political opponents, who are often conclusively demonized as traitors by the fact they openly oppose things like freedom to torture. Some of the freedom demanders have openly stated they want the freedom to commit acts for which, after World War II, people were convicted of war crimes and crimes against humanity. The definition of freedom appears to have changed from what our parents thought the word meant. Has anyone noticed the freedom demanders have already usurped for themselves the freedom to spy upon everyone, including their fellow citizens, without obtaining warrants or other safeguards against abuse? The freedom demanders passionately want the freedom to deny the sick and injured any health care. I suppose that is a freedom of a sort, but one that sure seems contrary to the Bible and every other moral imperative. They want the freedom to keep people from marrying preferred partners. Allowing others the freedom to choose seems to enrage the freedom demanders who want to be free to tell others what they cannot do. They want the freedom to eliminate labor unions, the freedom to abolish the minimum wage, the freedom to work without benefits or social security. Strangely, they want to give big business the freedom to send our workers' jobs to other countries and let newly out-of-work Americans have the freedom to starve. They simultaneously want the freedom to keep anyone with a brown skin from coming to America to work and the freedom to arrest those already here based on the suspicion their skin is not white. They want the freedom to deny poor kids from getting an education. They want the freedom to erect artificial barriers to prevent lower and middle class Americans from raising out of their particular class. They want freedom for the richest 1% of Americans to get richer at the expense of everyone else. I guess they assume the elite 1% will be grateful. They want bankers and stockbrokers and insurance companies and oil companies and importers to have the freedom to do whatever they want, unregulated, uninspected, untaxed. They want the freedom of CEOs to spend whatever they want to buy elections and politicians. They want the freedom to keep the activist judges off the court unless they are activist conservative judges. They want the freedom to facts, figures, history, and the scientific method in favor of the freedom to be proudly and loudly ignorant. They want the freedom to shout down without hearing anyone seeking to speak about anything they disagree with. They want the freedom to use character assassination and attack ads rather than debate on the merits like adults. They want the freedom to call someone a Nazi communist because they dare disagree with freedom demander dogma. I agree they should probably have that freedom to call an opponent names, no matter how childish. But it still amazes me they somehow believe history's polar opposites of Nazism and communism are the very same. Of the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, whose sole purpose was to enhance freedom, the freedom demanders can't really stand any of them except the right to pretend that the Second Amendment was not limited to militia. Their emails suggest they want the freedom to encourage and welcome the assassination of political leaders whose ideas or skin color they don't happen to like. They want the freedom to carry guns of any type anywhere and intimidate anyone they want. They want the freedom to own armor-piercing sniper 50 caliber machine guns with incendiary bullets that can bring down passenger jets. They want the freedom to own them without licenses, without background checks, without insurance, without tests like drivers must take to prove they know safety, and without consequences. Total freedom for guns, anyway, not total freedom for anything else. Of the four critical freedoms cited by Franklin Roosevelt and celebrated by the famous Norman Rockwell paintings, the freedom demanders grudgingly accept the right of assembly, so long as it is just for themselves. They seem to believe religious freedom is okay, for evangelical Protestants at least, and maybe Mormons, whose originally inspired doctrines contain a quirky retro-racism. In any event, their freedom demands regarding religion certainly do not seem to include freedom from religion, nor freedom of choice for pregnant women. They seem to want the freedom to bring back the ugly realities of segregation, inequality, hatred, and political suppression of opponents, and pretend those were the true, good old days of freedom. They want the freedom to ignore the long-established, agreed-upon international laws, morals, and our own governing instruments. We signed the Geneva Conventions at one time, thinking it was a good idea. The freedom demanders demand the freedom to go back on our word and break our promises. They claim they want freedom from big government and big debt, unless it is increased to support one of the freedoms being demanded, like the expensive budget-busting freedom to invade other countries and to take away their freedoms for a decade or so, especially weak countries populated by brownish or yellowish or blackish-skinned people who dress in funny clothing. The loud freedom demanders want the preemptive freedom, without a declaration of war as required by the Constitution, to bomb and kill the people of those countries. Innocent children, women, and civilians killed in the process. The freedom demanders want the freedom to denigrate their mangled body parts as mere collateral damage. They want the freedom to declare those in our service who sit at a computer here in the United States to do such bombing as heroes, and the freedom to declare those who die in suicide against us as cowards. I am not defending those who have counterattacked us or committed terrorist acts. I am simply trying to understand how the self-styled freedom demanders in this country are all that different from self-styled freedom fighters in other countries. Both groups scare the hell out of me. Only one thing is clear to me about these freedoms, so hotly invoked and so vehemently demanded by the likes of Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh, and the white protesters with the tea bags dangling from their hats, and the Sarah Palins and others fawning over them. The one thing clear to me from all their rhetoric about freedom, capitalized, is that if Jesus Christ, the one they profess to admire so much, came back alive today, he would not be running for office as a Republican, nor be a teabagger and not listen to anything Fox News has to say. Moreover, if Jesus Christ came back today with all those liberal ideas he was spouting back in biblical times, I am sure we would find the teabagging, Fox Boviating, Republican Pontius Pilates all demanding to crucify him. Amen. And that was Freedom According to the Right, by Charles Hillestad, who is a former Cannon Beach resident now living in McMinnville. He is a Vietnam veteran and an attorney. He wrote this article in 2008 for the North Coast Times-Eagle. This is Michael McCusker. Dylan Hauser Schalk has been the engineer. This Sunday, November 22nd, will be 57 years since John Fitzgerald Kennedy was assassinated. It seems almost as distant as Lincoln's assassination, a previous century, both in a previous millennium. It became sort of a game for a while to list similarities between the assassinations of both presidents, such as JFK was riding in a Lincoln automobile when he was shot, and that both assassins, John Wilkes Booth and Lee Harvey Oswald, were both shot to death, summarily executed, as it were, after capture. One aspect of this that sticks forever in the U.S. Marine Corps craw is that Lee Harvey Oswald is the most famous or infamous Marine in history. The pandemic is spreading throughout the USA like the wildfires of last summer. If you plan a large Thanksgiving fest, rethink, if not for yourself or family, then for everyone else, in particular medical staffs who are saturated with COVID crises and are under a great stress and exposure. Remember, protecting yourself, friends, and kin protects everybody else also.